SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From sultry Oceanport, New Jersey, Monmouth Park, Haskell Week. Good morning. A very good Thursday. Sirius 219 XM 201. What'd I say? Sirius, I can't remember the call numbers. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. And at our website too, stevebick.com. Happy to be back at Monmouth and in the communications office, made famous going back to the Monmouth Breeders' Cup, where I sat right at this desk, and I basically got pitched into working, and I loved it. It was a great week. I had come to Monmouth. I've told this story 10,000 times, and I'll tell it again. I lived in Brielle, just down the shore, and this was, I'd already become a very, intrigued fan and active horse player. I guess I would have been 30, or a little younger, late 20s, and Monmouth's proximity, this was really the first time. I mean, I grew up as a little kid on Long Island in Great Neck, but then Connecticut, really, for the most part, in Hartford. And so there was no racetracks close. That close. My grandfather, Julius, would come up every so often because he'd want to go to Narragansett. And he just on a lark or just because he knew somebody was running or probably because he wanted to get a bet in, and he'd drive up, stop at our house. And, I remember being a little kid. We might've been even I'm going to say around 66, 67, 68, maybe, I don't know, 7, 8, 9. And I remember, my grandfather pulling in the driveway. He drove Bonnevilles, which is one of the reasons that I bought four Bonnevilles in a row at a point. And, I was like, what's Grandpa doing here? And he might have been trying to get away from Ida, my grandmother. But he and my father, I'm surprised that now that I think about it, that they didn't take me. And our next door neighbor, Len Cedar, and my father and Lenny went with my grandfather, and they went to Rhode Island and to Narragansett. I can remember that. I haven't thought about that in ages. But when I moved to Brielle, my proximity to this plant gave me the opportunity to go to a racetrack on a really regular basis, as opposed to, special occasions and planning trips and going to Belmont and Aqueduct and Saratoga, mostly. And it was great fun. Tomorrow, Julie Crone actually is going to be on, and Julie's going to be up by us in Washington County. And she's got her junior jockey camp we're going to talk about that she's running at Long Shadow Farm. And that starts on Monday for kids. When I was here coming regularly, you couldn't bet her and you couldn't bet against her. Every horse she was on was a short price. And if you bet against her, you lost. And if you bet with her, you weren't going to make much money because she was just dominant, just unstoppable. Julie Crone tomorrow. It's funny. I talked to Mr. Crone yesterday, Jay Hubdy, and, And Jay said, you know, are you somewhere where Julie, you know, you can broadcast, you know, Julie could, you know, do a visit live? And I didn't realize that the junior jockey camp she's doing was starting as quickly as soon as it is. So I said, sure. I mean, I, you know, because I knew that I knew where she was doing it. And then I realized, I said, well, but I'm going to be down in Oceanport. So that's that. We'll have to do it by phone. And I look forward to it, to talking to the one and only Julie Crone tomorrow. But she dominated here. We'll talk to Tony Black later. Tony spent plenty of summers winning races here. He'll probably regale us. If I have to guess, Tony's going to regale you today with some of the jockey quarters. Famously, here at Monmouth, the jockey quarters had a swimming pool. It's been filled in now. They needed the space. But for years, there was a swimming pool that the jocks would, you know, take a dip and frolic. And Tony also has told us some stories of some late night hijinks in the Monmouth Park jockey's swimming pool. Pretty funny. So we'll talk to Tony. Talk to Steve Haskin today too. And Steve, you know, I mentioned yesterday that I hadn't had a chance really to talk about the passing of Sea Hero. And of course, in Saratoga, Sea Hero graces the paddock forever. Mr. Mellon's Derby winner and Travers winner. And Steve's got some wonderful Sea Hero thoughts and memories. So we'll talk Sea Hero and we'll talk Haskell. And let me segue over to yesterday's draw. Took forever last night for some reason for the PPs to come up and get issued yesterday, but I didn't get the chance to print them out actually till this morning. But let me give you, before we talk about yesterday's opening at Del Mar and in Saratoga's wet afternoon, going to be a bit better today. Races 4 and 8 remain on the turf. The 8th will move from the inner to the Mellon. So, as is typically the case on a day after wet weather and serious soaking rain, and boy, the storm here last night was astounding. I mean, it just poured here. But at Saratoga, 4th and 8th on the grass, 5th, 7th, and 10th for the carryover sequence. So, the entire carryover, not the entire carryover sequence, but all but the 8th race will be on the main track, all right? So the 5th, the maiden 5.5 for statebreds, and there are two MTOs, so we'll see who stays in. The 6th, where you're going to have a heavy Chad Brown favorite, who may be on a loose lead going 1.8 on the main. I'm sure some people are going to stand with smooth with a kick. Well, I don't think it's that simple. It's a very difficult pick six sequence, even off the turf. It's a difficult sequence. The 7th race that comes off, it's got 4 MTOs, so that race will hold together pretty well. That was a very good betting race on the turf, I got to tell you. There were like at least 3 or 4 horses at prices that were really seemed live on the grass. And the 8th stays on. That's kind of an interesting race. And again, Chad Brown with value proposition, the 2B, but from an outside post. So we'll see. 2-1. The 9th, second level allowance. And then the nightcap it may actually be even a more interesting race on the main track with no less than 7 MTOs. So that's a 5.5 furlong state bred second level allowance. So actually, there's a potential. I mean, I've already got the selections up, and I purposely left off the multi-race plays so that we could see what happened on the off the turf and post scratches. So we'll adjust accordingly, particularly the pick 6, pick 5, pick 4 on the second half of the card. But I wanted to make sure you knew that early here as we get started. Back to Monmouth and the Haskell draw, and they got it out of the way early. The seven horses that were expected, they're all involved. King for a Day draws the rail and will gain early position under Johnny. Jovia for Greg Sacco draws the two. It's basically, you know, since mid-spring has tried to gain the lead now, and he's been inside the last two races. He drew the one in both the Belmont and the Long Branch, but still seems like he'll be forward. Spun to run for Juan Carlos Guerrero. Broke the maiden in January at Parks. Came back a couple of months later. Allowance win. Now adds blinkers. I mean, he's won two races in a row, and Guerrero adds the blinkers. This is actually a colt. I'm just looking down. The hard spun out of Yawkey Way. Remember, Yawkey Way, if I'm not mistaken, she was a New York bred, Yawkey Way, and was pretty good. Bethlehem Road for Don Amici III, the quality road of D. Curry's that won the Parks Spring Derby, went to Ohio for the Ohio Derby and faltered, ended up beaten quite a ways, ultimately, after attending the pace. And there's going to be plenty of pace here. You know, so far, everybody we've discussed is a horse that wants to be on or near the lead. And then Mucho Gusto, who actually showed some rating ability really seriously for the first time in the Affirmed. Mucho Gusto, Joe Talamo comes to ride, been on him every single start for Michael Lund Peterson and Bob Baffert. Baffert looking for ninth Haskell? Who can keep track of his Preaknesses and Haskells? Everfast for Dale Romans. Maybe the beneficiary of the fast pace. And Maximum Security draws the seven. And that intrigues, to say the least, because Louis Saez, does he have to have the lead? You know, there's a moderate amount of territory from the gate to the turn, but there are literally five horses inside of him that, you know, may want to gain forward position. And if Saez and Jason Service absolutely are going to, you know, demand the lead in here, you're going to have a prompted scrum into the first turn. And when scrums arise, Maximum Security has not been the greatest rugby player ever. The scrum two back was an undoing. Didn't really need to be a bigger field to make this any more interesting than it is. The TVG.com Haskell Invitational, TVG's 20th anniversary. There's been a lot of that. We should take a poll among horse players. What's the most momentous anniversary this week or right now in your lifetime? The moon landing or the founding of TVG? Both were technological achievements. See, in light of having a co-host, I got to make myself laugh, I guess. I don't know. King for a Day, Jovia, Spun to Run, Bethlehem Road, Mucho Gusto, Everfast, Maximum Security. It's fun. This is fun. And, of course, the whole card, it didn't come up overly deep, top to bottom, in terms of you know, in terms of the stakes card, there's some very good races, though. And those that showed up, there's certainly no shortage of stars. I mean, that part of it, Divisadero, you know, certainly, Midnight Bisou. You know, there's some serious star power. The Monmouth Cup, Cold Front, the ever popular War Story. And then, let's see, the Matchmaker, one of the fun historic races. Competition of ideas coming out of the New York, where Homerick beat her. Seth Klarman and Chad Brown. Chad's got a couple here and there on the card. Grant Motion. Arnaud Delacour. Local powerhouse Kelly Breen, who's having a tremendous summer. Kelly, who we frequently talk to. He frequently turns up. He's got Valedictorian in the Matchmaker. And, of course, sponsored by Winstar. And, you know, this race famously matched literally, you know, stallion seasons with winners. It's very fun. It's one of the great old concepts in racing. So, Haskell Day. And, of course, when we come back, we'll address the heat and weather concerns that, you know, are being raised all around. One of the great pundits, one of the great paddock hosts in the game, Brad Thomas. Sans shades. Shades literally off in this case. Good to see you, Brad. Let's take a quick break. We're at Monmouth. Great to be here.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at expressbet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races at Monmouth Park, about 20 minutes in to the Thursday get-together, and I got Brad Thomas to agree to a visit. I've tried repeatedly. I'm telling you, 15 years. I don't think Brad, I think he was on maybe once or twice early on by phone, but he's got obligations, and I twisted his arm. And so we'll talk to Brad Thomas at 11 o'clock, and looking forward to that. Really has a highly respected opinion and approach. You know, he's got a bit of that, savant style that frequently is a positive when you're a handicapper. You know, just a certain focus and single-mindedness and work ethic and all that. And he does a very good job and has been here for a long, long, long time, of course. And we'll look forward to won't be a long visit, but it'll be nice to have Brad Thomas on the show. And also, we'll get. I'm sure Tom Pepsi will join us as well. Tom Cassidy from TVG last couple of years. And Frank, probably tomorrow. Frank has breezed in for visits and for some opinions the last few years on Friday. So, and we'll get John Himes. And I'm sure we'll hear from Dennis Drazen as well. We'll get. You know, some updates and thoughts about the progress of the New Jersey Horsemen and the facility and the long-term plans, and of course a very secure future, immediate future certainly, and the gaming, obviously the sports betting that literally only happened on the timetable that it did because of Monmouth Park, the New Jersey Horsemen, and specifically Dennis Drazen, single-handedly. There's John Himes coming in. Those of you that have listened for the entire run of the legal proceedings that ultimately went the way that gamblers and sports fans were hoping. Every visit we had with Dennis, I wonder if I don't know if Casey. We'll have to talk to Casey when if we get a chance, and it would be fun to find all the conversations and take snippets from each of them, and Drazen insisting each time after each setback. That we're going to win. It'll ultimately go our way. It's a states' rights issue. It'll be. I mean, he never wavered. And listen, this is not the sports gambling isn't the sports betting isn't. It's not going to do. It's not going to be an avalanche of money, obviously, that flows into racing coffers, especially if the game doesn't appropriately respond and do the things that they should and can to be competitive and make horse betting attractive, more attractive. But there's a legacy that was established by Dennis Drazen. And as I said to him at the time, from a professional standpoint, as an attorney, as a lawyer, it's an achievement, an epic achievement, what he did. Amazing. So everybody, years from now, people won't necessarily remember and know the specifics, but in horse racing, you will. You'll know who and what and how it happened. Speaking of jurisprudence, we'll see. I don't know if Drew Cuoto will be able to join us or not. I asked Drew if he has time, going into today's legal proceeding. They're going to go into court with the suit on behalf of Jerry Hollendorfer later this morning. A hearing starts at 11:30. I think 11, did I see 11:30 Pacific? Yeah, I think 11:30 Pacific. Let me check the note. Here we go. Jay Privman yesterday, 8:30 Pacific, so 11:30 our time. So we won't hear anything, but the hearing that seeks a temporary restraining order to allow Jerry Hollendorfer to enter horses and run horses, even as an owner in his name, 8:30 in downtown San Diego. So 8:30 Pacific. All right. So 11:30 hours. So figure by who knows. I mean, I don't know if there'll be a decision rendered or if they'll. I suppose if you ask for a restraining order, you get an immediate, maybe some of the legal experts out there might weigh in. But we'll see. Be aware. Keep. we'll see about it. I don't know. We'll find out. All right. Talking about Del Mar, let's stay there for a minute. Talk about yesterday. And I'm just the opening day at Del Mar seemed to go great. And how about Hammer yesterday? Hammer giving you a couple of different ideas about how to approach the meet. And one of the things he said was watch out for Alfredo Marquez. Sure enough, the best price of the day, Alfredo Marquez. Good job, Hammer. 14.60 in that fifth race. What was notable, I thought, about the day was how for the most part, the wins really got spread around. And in fact, I think you had 10 different training winners, right? O'Neill, Mandela, Bill Spar, Tim McKenna, Marquez, Craig Lewis, Jeff Bondi, Sadler, Jessican, just under 2-1 as the favorite, and got up late and really had to work Flavian Pratt getting by Nold, the John Sheriff's Jerry and Ann Moss runner, and had to really grind, and just gets the nose in down. And then the other two winners, Dan Ward for Jerry, and for Michael Stinson, King Jack, an allowance win. So Dan Ward, one for one, getting started. And then you had Peter Miller and Gary Barber in the nightcap, Give Me the Loot, as the favorite. And shorter priced horses pretty much reigned on the day. Not everyone was a favorite, but it was a good day for shorter prices. Flavian Pratt, I think three wins, right? I think Flavian, but otherwise everybody else spread them around. So it was fun. It's just great. You know, it's great to hear Trevor. It's great to hear Trevor Demon's voice. Very nice opening. Where the turf meets the surf. And we'll talk to Rich Eng later, too. We'll get Rich's early take. And actually, we didn't get to John. We didn't get to John White this week. John's doing some stewarding, and he had been involved as well on the entry group that was evaluating entries. But we owe John a call as well. Let's turn to Saratoga. And you know, yesterday we knew that, you know, things had gotten pretty soggy, and the decision made earlier, as early as possible, to take everything off the turf. And after we got off the air, of course, you had the cancellation of the jump race, and it made it to the overnight to be able to re-enter for Sunday. So the 2 1/16 mile non-winners of two allowance, that'll go on Sunday. And I imagine, you know, all at least the seven that were going to run yesterday might even buy time for Elizabeth Voss and Renown, who had a little bit, as Bill Gallo told you yesterday, had an abscess, or, you know, maybe the beginnings of an abscess. If it's the beginning, then I don't know if he'll be ready for Sunday, but we'll see. We'll see if anybody gets added to the seven that were expected yesterday. But they canceled the first, and boy, the rain came in just droves. Tina and I were on our way here to Monmouth, and yeah, the sky. It's funny. The skies would open, then it would stop, and you would think, "Oh, okay, the skies are getting lighter. Oh, there's some blue sky." And then 15 minutes later, you got pelted again. I mean, it was relentless, and you saw some of the images from Saratoga if you were watching. Just, you know, crazy rain. It didn't eliminate the opportunity to score. I'll tell you that. And this came up last week, and I keep kind of beating this drum. Andy Serling explains it to you regularly that when races come off the turf, it represents a unique opportunity because the races get bet strangely, and people, especially during Saratoga and these big, you know, big focus meets, if there's, you know, money that bets the race as if it was still on the grass, there's horses that stay in the race that just aren't going to win and just don't, they don't have a chance. I mean, they have a chance, but it's very unlikely that they're going to run to the kind of prices if they're getting bet, you know, still to any extent. And that happened several times again yesterday, most notably, and I had to send this out in a tweet. In the fourth race, seven horses stayed in, and the favorite ended up being Flat Rate, and second choice was See Now, and spectator sport was the third choice. The fourth choice was gemography. They were between 5-2 and 4-1. And that allowed the Sakari, a main track only, Ron Paolucci, actually, and Anthony Quartarolo, a violence gelding, who won at Saratoga last year. That wasn't enough of a motivation. The Sakari, if you, I put up his thoroughgraph sheet, the race two back, the allowance race at Thistledown, and maybe that was part of the reason that he went off at 14-1. Because people think, oh, well, couldn't win at Thistledown. Well, on Thoroughgraph, to be honest, you can see it. Two back ran a 7 and ran back to that race. He was going to be a winner, and that's exactly what he did. And he wins easy and pays $30.60. So I will not harangue anybody anymore on this. You've heard enough. But all day, especially on the early part of the card, Pete's Play Call, who actually also had a nice write-up in the clocking report, Pete's Play Call paid $11.40. The Sakari, $30.60. Just Fly, who was the pick anyway. And this was not off the turf. This was still on the main track. Just Fly got really bet down to 2-1 favoritism and wins, won easy. That was that Joe Sharp that we were pushing. Then you had the tricky horse, that Ardara Bell. And here's another horse from the Clocker Report. This is Rob Atrus for Sandy Goldfarb. And this was a 30 claimer. The race came off the turf. Mazzabella, who was going to be, you know, the favorite and you know, a legitimate favorite if it stayed on the grass, gets bet to 2-5. Why? Ardara Bell was an interesting note in the clocking report, a horse that had that Mike Welch and the team had been impressed with in the mornings, but has not translated to the afternoon, was an import that George Abreu was training, dipped in for $30,000, got taken by Sandy Goldfarb, and you know, subsequently did not run great, 40-2. Comes back in this 30-2 and off the turf, wins and pays $16.40. But was a horse that, you know, had worked, was working well. So a couple of prices on the early half of the pick six. We have a $30,000 pick six carryover today. Off the record, the Rudy Brissett horse. You knew about this horse because of Brissett's visits. Second choice, actually, 660. Slimy was very tough. That was a tough horse to come up with. The Rich claiming race and really got a hustling ride. Dave Canizzo sending out Jose Lascano and ran down Break Curfew, who ran hard and, you know, was being kind of hounded by Maiden Beauty. But Slimy, 15-1. So wet track day, smaller fields, and yet look at all these prices and a carryover. And then Special Relativity, this was a tough horse to come up with, I thought. How about Davey Cohen with two wins yesterday? Talk Viv to me is just, I don't know. Brissett, you know, had a real shot for two wins on the day. But, you know, at no point while chasing Carrera Cat, at no point did Talk Viv to me look like a winner, and Special Relativity pretty much assured your pick six carryover. And then in the nightcap, Cassie and Gary Barber. So two wins on the day for Barber, both in nightcaps. How about that? Gary Barber wins the nightcap at Saratoga and the nightcap at Del Mar. Violent Point, a New York-bred violence filly. And she romped. I didn't check the figure on this, but this was a big effort. So that was your Saratoga and $30,000 in the pick six carryover. Still $2. I know there was a lot of consternation about the potential for the jackpot concept, and it still may be brought out at some point during the meet. But for now, there is no pick six. There's just your standard $2 pick six at the Spa. Going forward, we're going to take a break right here. We'll come back and look forward to a couple of visitors in a little bit. And we still got more to look at for today and going into the weekend. Get you some other pieces of news, including the NTRA, the NHC contest that was announced yesterday afternoon as I was driving down to Jersey. Beat Beck. Who doesn't want to do that? Let's take a break. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sum on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Who are you, love letter?
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Beck on SiriusXM Radio.
I'm gonna write what I want you to do to me in a letter. I'm gonna write it for good, or for bad, or for worse, or for better.
Love letter.
I'm gonna write it for you so that you can be my lover.
Be my lover.
Ooh. When it is yours, I am yours, baby, now and forever.
We're back at the races. Back at Monmouth Park, and we're—I guess Tony. All right, Tony's going to join us now.
I'm here.
How about you? All right, I've already told—I've hinted at the great Tony Black Monmouth Park stories.
I have a bunch of stories from all the racetracks, but I guess Monmouth, I have some from Monmouth, some from Parks, you know. Wherever I visited, I kind of make a story happen there.
Well,
I guess Monmouth's looking forward, I guess, to a big day, high school day, this weekend, and hopefully we'll see a tremendous race from my favorite horse, Maximum Security.
What's he going to do? What does Luis Saez do, Tony, with seven? You know, it's a seven-horse field, and he's drawn outside. And there is almost nothing but speed. I mean, the other than Dale Romans, Everfast, who's going to drop out of it and come with one run, everybody else wants to be first or second.
Well, you know what? That's good because the outside post is a good draw for a race that could set up like that. But so you know, the one thing you don't do in a race like that is over-strategize it. You know, and that's what riders make a mistake of doing sometimes. Leaving the gate, if I was on the horse, you know, and I'm an old jock with old school ideas, but I would let him run out of there, then see how it's developing. You know, sometimes riders get the idea that there's tremendous speed in the race, and nobody goes. I don't think that will happen in this particular race, because every rider in the race knows that you can't let Maximum Security walk the dog. You can't let him go and do things the way he would like to do them. You're going to have to make him run to beat him with somebody and make him run early. But the other view of the race is Saez is on him. He's got an outside post, and he can determine what he wants to do after he sees what other riders are doing in the early stages of the race. I think it's a good position to be in. Let him come out of there, see if one or two of them want to go, and they were hoping to hook up with me because they figured they could make me utilize my horse too much too early. He's sitting in a good position. It's not like he's going to be eating a lot of dirt. It's not like he's going to be hung wide. And if he is two or three wide, four wide, who cares? If he's the horse we think he is, he's going to overcome that. Because I think it's a marginal field, and we'll have to go from there. The post position is to his advantage, and the speed isn't going to be something that's going to be terribly detrimental because he's got a good post to deal with it.
Interesting. Well, it's a track that has played kindly historically to speed, and at least, you know, being forwardly placed. I don't know. I guess King for a Day is he's certainly not compromised. It doesn't necessarily, I suppose, doesn't have to have. He's going to have to establish position, but he's not necessarily needing the lead. Based on the way Bravo wrote him in the Pegasus. Looking at that, but Jovia wants the lead without fail. Spun to Run has been on the lead and now adds blinkers. Tony, talk about that for a second. I mean, here's a horse that finally broke through in January for Guerrero, and then comes back 60 days later. This might be a little bit of an ouchy horse, because 60 days between the win and then showing back up in an allowance, wins again, and wins by open lengths again, 88 buyer, career best, now is off another 75 days. But adds blinkers. Two wins in a row, and you change equipment?
Yeah, and you know what? At some tracks, off the win, you can change equipment and add blinkers. You know, they tell you, your last race that you won your last race, you can't add blinkers. But I guess in Jersey, you can do that. You know, you can put blinkers on after you've won your last race. I don't know why you would put blinkers on him unless he's seeing something that he's doing in the morning that he's thinking it's going to show up in the afternoon, and he wants to correct it before it shows up in the afternoon. But blinkers only make a horse be more attentive in the early stages, you know, and he's already showed he's attentive in the early stages. you are correct when you say there must be some kind of issues that this horse is dealing with, because nobody gives horses 16, 70 days in between races unless they have to. You know, when a horse is on his game, you run him. You strike while the iron's hot. So obviously he needs time in between races, probably because of some nagging ailment that he's dealing with on a, you know, daily, on a race-to-race basis. But the Atten Blinkers, it does, I mean, what do you want him to do, show extreme speed? Maybe that's what they want. But, you know, when I look at this race, I say it's a seven-horse field and six of them can show speed. What's the worst scenario? You get hung up wide in the first turn, going into the turn. You get hung up three or four wide by the middle of the turn. And nobody looks at what happens by the middle of the turn. They say, oh, man, he's four wide going into the turn. He's losing a lot of ground. Usually by the middle of the turn, you've gotten two of them out of there if you're the outside horse. So you're three, you know, you're three wide. And by the end of the turn, you're stalking whoever really is being overly zealous and wanting the speed. So you might be four wide going into turn. You might even be five wide going into turn. I doubt it. You're four wide going into turn. Coming out of the turn, you'll be looking at one or two of them. And the whole turn, you're not going to be the fourth horse out. I just don't see that happening. It never happens like that. The only reason, like I said, that it won't be one of those scenarios where riders look at it and say, boy, there's five of us with speed. And every once in a while you see that happen where in other races, five with speed and nobody goes. You should have been the one that goes. That's not going to happen because everybody knows. Yeah, everybody overemphasizes the speed and nobody goes. Then what happens? You know who used to go? Me. There'd be five of them in there. Five of them in there with speed. You guys sit there and look at each other. I'm gone, and we'll figure out what happens by the middle of the turn. And by the end of the turn, most of you are going to be wishing you went. The inside horses are going to be wishing they went. But, you know, that's just race riding, and that's just the mentality of riders, generally speaking. You know, five of us have speed. Yeah, well, somebody better go. And if nobody goes, I'm gone. And that's what happens in these races. But the only thing that's against it happening in this race is everybody knows Maximum Security can't let him have his way if you're going to try to beat him. I think he's going to show improvement off of his last race. I think, you know, he's been training up there, and he's familiar with everything that's going on around him. I think he's going to run a big race. And, you know, we'll see what happens. The one thing everybody is dealing with this weekend is weather. But you know I believe they canceled at Delaware. They canceled at Parks. What they haven't canceled at Monmouth, and they're not going to. And sometimes you know you got a little bit of that ocean breeze, and the weather's a little kinder there than what it would be at Delaware or at Parks. So yeah, everybody's dealing with it. All the horses are dealing with it in that race. I think it's going to be a big day, and it's a big draw to Haskell, and it'll be interesting to see what my favorite horse, Maximum Security, does.
Well, and we're going to talk at some point this morning, probably with John Himes, and we'll get an answer. We're also going to hear from, or at least not an answer, because I don't think they're going to make a decision on this here or at Saratoga until they get closer. I mean, I can tell you that on Tuesday, in Saratoga, the initial forecast was for 93 degrees, and it never got to 85. So I don't, you know, I think you get a little closer and then make a decision. We'll hear from Pat McKenna later in New York, and we'll get what Naira's thoughts are going in to Saturday. You know, I can tell you from thinking about it's got to be over 10 years now. There was that unbelievable period, and we ended up canceling, I think, at least one day, where I can remember coming in, and it was unbelievable. We had, I can tell you about a day that, I mean, people were passing out from the heat in the backyard. The medics were getting called all over the place to, you know, to attend to people that we're passing out from heat. We'll see. It's the heat index, I think, means as much now these days as the temperature does.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes in some of the areas, like Saratoga and some of these areas, even, you know, like Monmouth, you're dealing with a different set of circumstances than what the weatherman just absolutely forecasts. And sometimes you have to play it by ear. And Saratoga might really be all right. Mammoth might really be all right. Delaware, it's in a valley, boy. I'll tell you what, I've been down there. There's one thing that can really affect Delaware is temperature. And then at times rainfall really affects it because nothing seems to drain down there. And parks, it looks like they're probably going to make the. I think they made the decision. I don't want to put out a rumor, but I think they canceled. And it looks like it's going to be a temperature of excess of 100 degrees with a heat index close to 110 or 105, 110. So it's almost like a no-brainer at parks. But some of these other tracks, you have to play it by ear. And what we're dealing with in this particular time frame when it comes to racing is public perception of the sport. And, of course, we don't want to upset the public. And sometimes we have to do what we feel pacifies them. You really do. You know, hey, we're trying to survive in a sport that has sometimes people knocking it or against it. And sometimes we have to not just pacify the public, and sometimes it's the right thing to do, and sometimes it is just strictly to pacify the public so we don't get public sentiment against us, because we have enough of that.
That's for sure. Tony, a couple of Mammoth notes here with you, and the first stake of the day is the Ocean Port on Saturday, and going back, 20-plus years, you won it on Boyce.
Boyce, yeah, that was a nice horse, that I had the opportunity to ride. Won a couple stakes on him, a few stakes on him, I believe. Did he win the Eatontown or one of those races? The Ocean Port, I know.
You won the Ocean Port definitely in 97. And
I forget. It's been quite a few years, but he was a nice horse to ride. I believe he had speed. And it was Forbes trained him, correct?
John Forbes, absolutely.
Yeah, John Ford's training, and I almost was going to get an opportunity, if I remember correctly, to ride him. Did he run in the Breeders' Cup? Yeah, I think he ran, but I didn't get the opportunity. I think Julie rode him in Breeders' Cup.
Well, Julie, every prominent jock in Jersey rode him. Julie did, Chucky Lopez did. He did run in the Belmont Breeders' Cup handicap, that version in September of 97.
Yeah, that would have been my only shot to get a ride in a Breeders' Cup. But, he was a nice horse to ride. He was a lot of fun to ride. Had speed and tried every time I sat on him. He was a trier. I think he even came up through the ranks and was in for a tag not too many starts before I rode him. And then he wasn't claimed, and then I wound up riding him in Ocean Port, a couple lounge races. I forget. It's been so many years. But it was a lot of fun, I remember, to ride, because he tried every time I sat on him. I was lucky to be on him. But, brings back memories. But some of them are a little vague because it's been a lot of years, Steve.
How about Haskell's? What? Any Haskell's? I know you didn't. You must have ridden it a few.
Might have been one Haskell, so I can't remember. It's hard to listen. I didn't remember a Cotillion until you told me about it.
Well, you do remember skinny dipping in the jockey's quarters swimming pool.
Oh yeah, I could tell you some stories about that. Going back at night around 12 o'clock, and of course the jocks were closed, but the pool's closed. Maybe 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and several of our friends would go back there, and I could name names right now, but they might get nasty. But in fact, wound up skinny dipping and with a trainer, and I think I'm going to mention his name because he can't deny it. It was with his first wife and my first wife, who became ex-wife, Danny Lopez, his first wife to be, I believe, at the time, and my first wife, who was, and they wound up opening the pool unofficially around 1 o'clock in the morning. and we all went skinny dipping because we didn't have no bathing suits. It was an unexpected event. There was no, who's going to carry a bathing suit around after you leave a bar or a place that you just ate at and drank at? And who's going to carry a bathing suit? Nobody. We're going up for bathing suits, birthday suits. What's the difference?
Well, I love that story, and I've seen it. I may even have it at home. I got to think about this. A postcard of the pool, there's always been at Monmouth, lots of, family-ish activities. They got the miniature golf course, and it's family summertime, and you come here, and it's like part of summer vacation, and you start the day maybe at the beach, and then you come here for a handful of races, then you go for a short dinner. I mean, it's just a delight. I mean, the place is one of my favorite. And I explained at the start of the show, Tony, when I lived in Brielle, it was really the first racetrack I attended on a regular basis, and it was through that summer of 88, and I loved it. And I've always had a huge affection for the facility.
Yeah, I loved Monmouth. It was a fun place to be. It was like a working vacation when I did go there. And like in, I guess it was 96 when I rode there the entire meet. I guess it was 96 or 97. And you know what? It was really anytime you're a jockey and you go into a racetrack, it's a competitive atmosphere. But there was just something about Monmouth where there was a lot of fun after the races and good fun. It was really nice. It was enjoyable. Everybody stayed someplace near the track. And you go to, in the dark days, you wound up at the beach. And like you say, you wound up at the beach. If you had the race day, you wound up riding and going to the races, going out to dinner at night. And then sometimes the late night excursion back to Jock's room and skinny dipping. what fun it was. And it really is still is just a nice place to ride and to be at. It brought back a lot of memories when you mentioned Monmouth Park. And a lot of good memories. Voice was one of them. And I thank you for reminding me on Boyce. I didn't ride a lot for Forrest. Probably that's maybe one of the only horses I rode for him, but it was the right one to ride, wasn't it?
That's for sure. When you win a graded stake. So, Tony, I appreciate it. And we're also getting rolling at Saratoga and looking forward to your Hall of Fame visit. We'll talk about that as it gets closer.
And you know what? There's a horse that Richard Vega is entering for Sunday up there, and I wish I could come up to even watch her run. But I think as good as she's doing, I could probably even ride her and win a race. It's a horse called Collegeville Girl. She's making her first start in quite a while, and hopefully Sunday she'll make it a winning start.
Oh, tremendous. I'm glad you told us because she became a real favorite, and she's had a couple of physical issues, setbacks, so it's great to hear that she's in.
I ain't missed a day of getting on her, and I think she's going to run a big one, and Richie's probably mad now telling her that I'm opening my big mouth. There are no secrets in this game. I worked for half mile the other day, and the last day of mile, she went and cut and changed.
Now you're really hammering it home. All right.
That's all right. You'll get mad and nobody cuts me out tomorrow morning, but I don't care.
Tony Black, everybody. And Tony, I appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Take care. Keep up the good work, and thanks for everything.
Not at all. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take the top of the hour break. And the part-time voice of Monmouth Park and the part-time voice of Gulfstream Park West. And what else? Where else? And the voice of Colonial, just weeks away. And actually, you help me because you're going to come sit and talk. Jason Beam is here. I think for the third different venue we're talking? Churchill, Vegas. I didn't make it to. Well, Jason Beam is in town, and it does occur to me, I haven't been up in the crow's nest, up in the announcer's booth in a long time, but you, Miramonte, and Cassidy, you can't all be in one place at one time, can you? The three of you. It's the three horsemen of the apocalypse in terms of microphones. But and then fold in little Pat Cummings and forget about it. Jason Beam joins us next. Getting excited about it. Have you were down there, right? You went down to Colonial. You haven't actually seen it. The July 31st. It's funny because I just heard you're filling an obligation because I told Jill Byrne we need to start having, you know, some regular visits here in advance of entry. And here's a regular visit right away. Jason Beam next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
To make you want me, I can fabricate the truth. I'll give you easy to keep me destitute. You hang me up on the line, hang me out to dry, and you got nothing.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And I'm going to put up a great picture. Nikki Kay, who is taking over the media coordinator job here. And there's always some terrific, this has been a hotbed actually over the years of young turf publicist staffing. And Nikki did something. I didn't want to say it. I don't want to ruin the really cool surprise. So I'm going to put that up with a picture of Jason as well. And you know, it's funny, Jolene is asking me, she said Jason Bean, and no, it's Orson Bean, Jason Beam.
Yeah, I've almost given up correcting people on how to spell it. because everybody goes does like the booze, the B-E-A-M. So, but well, it's two E's.
Well, the best was the picture I sent you from Colonial for when they had the media introduction. Speaking of which, you reminded me. I mean, it's sneaking up.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly? Well, but in the meantime, you're on a world tour. Where have you been?
My total trip will be 6 months on the road, I think, or maybe even a little bit more. But I left April 20th from Seattle, which is home, and came back to Monmouth to fill in for Frank for the first 7 weeks of the meet. And then I went up to Boston for a week, got to see Fenway, got to go to Suffolk Downs closing weekend. Then I had kind of a two-week break because I knew I was going to come back here just to help the media office and stuff during Haskell time. And so I went up to Buffalo, of all places.
I saw that.
And hung out there, went to Woodbine a couple times, got to go to Fort Erie, went to Buffalo Raceway, and so I knocked a few tracks off the list. And now back here for a couple weeks, and then down to Colonial, and then back here again, and then possibly down to GPW. I haven't formally talked to Pete about that, but it was hinted at.
Well, then this is, you know, this is a nice in lieu of a permanent a fixture kind of a meet. This suits your personality too.
The Gulfstream Park thing was kind of my testing the waters again, because life just kind of fell apart at Louisiana Downs, and so I wasn't sure if I wanted to do the long term big, you know, moves away from home again. And so GPW was a nice little couple week test, and I figured Monmouth would be a kind of good 2 month test, and then the Colonial thing came up, and then I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I may as well do it. And so but I love the idea of the Colonial thing stretching out a little bit and just kind of having a shorter meet to call, and then, you know, I can do my show from home and be home more of the year. But for now, but I mean, it's also been a trip of a lifetime too. I mean, I've gotten to see and do more things. The beauty of Monmouth Park, I mean, aside from the great racing and the track and the people and stuff, is you're an hour from Philadelphia. You're, you know, 45 minutes or an hour from New York City. You know, I've gotten to see all these world-class cities and places that I just never thought I would get to see.
If we added in the search for a bicycle, this would be me's big adventure.
Yeah. You don't want to see the search. When I was 15, I did the Seattle to Portland bike ride, which is this huge, like 10,000 people, and it's a 2-day event. And I got off the bike in Portland, and I remember it was about 2 days before I got my driver's license. I was 15 going into 16. I never touched a bike again. that was enough of that.
I was gonna quiz you about Colonial, but you haven't seen the place yet, so
no, not yet.
You're gonna have to.
I'm gonna get there a week early, actually a little more than a week early, and part of my my first week there, I think, is going to be to kind of show everybody else, you know, via video and social media and stuff, what to expect, what it looks like, the city itself, and so we're gonna.
The city? What city?
Well, Richmond is close.
No, it's not.
That's where I'm staying.
You really haven't been there. You're in for a big surprise.
Okay. I think I heard there was no hotels in New Kent County.
So there's no nothing.
Yeah.
There's the racetrack. Yeah. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful. But the city, that's rich.
It didn't look that far on the map.
Those are just scale.
Yeah,
There's a scale involved there, Jason. Obviously, cartography is not your strength.
Well, I'm used out west, where if you want to go between cities, it's 2.5 hours.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Which brings up, you know, John White. My dad and I, we used to drive from Yakima to Helena and back in an afternoon to get a bed in.
My favorite thing I ever did with John White was I interviewed him on my old Portland. We had an hour weekly show, and I got in two questions in 18-minute segment. And one of them was, John, how are you? So number two was something about, you know, John, you're a Northwest guy. You know, you worked over at Playfair. And it was like, he had, and I went to dinner with him, and it was the same thing. And it was so fun to listen to because, you know, as a Northwest guy, like, you know, I love the history of our racing up there. And so, like, to hear him talk about Playfair and, you know, Gary Henson and all these great, you know, voices and names of people I, you know, kind of knew about the history of was really, really neat.
Have you ever heard of Turbulator?
Yeah, it's a John White's. That was in that answer, by the way. I should call 95.5 the game and see if we can find
it.
Because I remember you know, you do a 15-minute interview, you always want to be over prepared with questions and stuff like that. And so I think I had probably 10 or 11 questions, and we got to literally two of them. So.
He's the best. He's so much fun.
Well, and you know, yesterday at the draw, Juan Carlos Guerrero
He ran off?
that might be the best. Now,
Frank, he was a runoff?
Frank was sitting there, and then when Frank got done, he goes, I just want you to know you're an interviewer's best friend, sir. And it was, I mean, he went through every work, every start, and it was, but as an interviewer, sometimes those guys are great because it makes your job a little bit easier, especially if, you know, you're on the tail end of a day.
Did he explain why he's putting blinkers on a horse that's won two straight?
Yeah, he said he wanted to put them on after the first time, and they said no. And then he said he just kept telling them, like, look, you have to. And I'm trying to remember exactly what his quote was. But, no, he had said it was something he'd been wanting to do, and he said he finally found a reason to let him do it.
Interesting. I brought it up with Tony, and Tony was addressing the pace scenario, and we haven't had much of a chance to really go through the. I don't know if you noticed it or if who was printing up PPs, but the PPs didn't go up. It was 9:30 when I gave up.
Oh yeah.
What time did the card get?
I saw the overnight at 8:07.
That's about right, because we were at dinner.
But I mean, I know from being here and from wait because I always wait so I can color my programs. That's pretty standard. For the Wednesday night or the Saturday cards to get carded by late Wednesday night.
This was exceptionally late.
Mr. Himes will be on the show later.
Oh, right? Don't worry, we'll beat him up. The converted racing secretary. Or actually, we should probably just call Mike Dempsey and blame it on Dempsey. That's appropriate because the Dempsey taught him everything. I'm anxious for you to hear from Colonial when you get there. Yep. Because I don't know what the sight lines are like, in terms of.
I talked to Dave Rodman they had reached out about doing it, and so I told him, let me think about it, and so I talked to Dave, and he told me the real world trick, because that track is huge, right? Like, it's
yes.
A mile and a quarter dirt oval
yes.
With a mile and a 16th dirt chute, so it's, I don't want to say Belmontian, but it's the next closest thing.
No, it's big. It's fast.
But Dave said the dirt races, which there are few, he said when they turn for home, they're coming right at you and they're way far away. And he said that's the tough spot. I think on the grass it's not, because it is a flat window. It's not like the garden window that you have at some places.
Yeah. Churchill.
And so he said it can be a little bit tricky. But yeah, like Churchill, Lone Star, those places, they have, I mean, those are the best booths because there's no obstructions. There's a big garden window that you're almost like out in, and so there's you don't have to do any dancing around windowsills or anything like that. And River Downs was like that. River Downs was the best booth I've ever seen. And the reason was when they were remodeling it, they asked Kevin Gomer, what do you want? And so it was like
good
a perfect garden window. It had a desk that kind of ran around the window at chest level so he could set his elbows. Like, it was just perfectly
designed.
Set up.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
Like, I was with Geller at Woodbine. I am never going to criticize any grass call at Woodbine ever again.
He can barely see.
There's a big barrier you have to see around the camera. They're coming dead straight at you because he's actually hanging over the turf course. And so, like, there is almost zero depth perception. It's really challenging. And he actually had a bar put up because Dan Loisel, I guess, used to sit on the windowsill to see out there. And there ain't no net or anything.
Holy cow.
I mean, it's six floors down. And Geller's not a fan of heights. And he even told me, he's like, Dan Loisel must have been crazy. so Robert actually had a bar put in. So in case he did lean, he was saved a little bit.
How about that?
Yeah.
There we go. Some inside baseball on the announcing on the announcers' booths. I love it.
The only people care about announcers are other announcers.
That's not true. People are intrigued by it. They certainly carry on when there's decision making and when certain guys and gals get a chance to Lynn Sneerson making her annual. The only thing missing is where's Joni? You and Joni are the Haskell entry. She's home in Saratoga. She's brunching. No.
Two queen size beds in my room. You're welcome to stay. And she said she's thinking about it.
Can't run a Haskell without Lynn Sneerson and Joni Lawrence. That's not right. I'll put up the picture of you guys holding the trophy, the Haskell trophy, which weighs about the same as a general winner of the race. That's the biggest trophy I've ever seen. That thing, that and the Belmont trophy, that's like a garbage can size trophy. It's unbelievable. Good to see you, Lynn. I haven't seen you in ages. Yeah. You know Lynn Sneerson?
As of yesterday, I do.
There you go. Jason Beam. Lynn Sneerson. How'd you like it here? You were obviously, people loved having you, and you were an instant hit.
I felt welcome instantly, which I was kind of nervous about, because obviously you're filling in for somebody who's very beloved, and it's a big track, and I would say I was second off the layoff. I had 2 weeks at GPW, but other than that, it had been 3 years since I called a race, so I spent a lot of weeks sitting in front of my TV muting the calls and practicing just to try to get the cadence back and all that. But everybody was great, and the experience was better than I could have anticipated for a lot of reasons.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, and it's, you had the excitement. We did talk to you.
We talked before the United Nations.
Before the United Nations. That's what it was. And you were all excited at your first, not just the first graded stake, grade one?
Yeah, the Salvatore was my first graded stake.
There you go.
And then we did the Monmouth stakes. But, the Salvatore, in fact, I made a new demo tape. That's my new first race.
The Salvatore?
Salvatore. I just put like three or four. I figured it looked good to have like four graded races and a grade one on there instead of a non-winner of two Florida bred. No disrespect to those
involved. No. Exactly. I think everybody understands. Any thoughts? Any thoughts going into Saturday?
One thing I'm helping out in the media department, so I'm going to call Jeff Bloom in a minute here to talk about Midnight Beast. So I'm really and honestly surprised he had come on my show a week ago and he'd said it, and I was like, really? Because I knew she was already up at Saratoga, and I figured she would just run in the big one at the end. It was not the Alabama. It's
Personal Ensign.
Or maybe find one earlier on. But the fact they wanted to come down here, I think it's her ninth track that she's run at in 16 starts. So real curious to see Midnight Beast. I mean, it's pretty cool to get a division leader like that on your undercard. And, in the Haskell, I think the draw made things a little interesting yesterday, just in the sense that it kind of reverses the roles for Maximum Security and King for a Day. King for a Day was outside of him last time, and I thought was given a very good ride and just kind of never let him, take a breath. He had to work pretty hard. I think they went 46 and change that day. But even through the binoculars, I could tell about the half-mile pole that Max was having to work that day, and King for a Day just seemed very, very comfortable outside of him. So curious what they do with Maximum Security. If he makes the lead, do they go right to the rail again, or do they maybe stay out a little bit? And part of that will depend on, I think, how the track plays, because we're supposed to see some rain today throughout most of the afternoon, but it is supposed to dry up and obviously be pretty hot.
And the heat, the heat part for Saturday, that's the one concern.
Yesterday was very muggy. We were out doing a video, Nikki and I, for the Facebook Live, and like I was like, oh, it's not too bad. And then about a minute into it, like I could feel sweat falling on my glass. I mean, it was pretty horrendous yesterday. So I hopefully with it'll be able to dry out a little Friday and maybe not be so humid. Because to me, as a West Coaster, like that's what gets you is that I've been in Vegas in the summer. I've been in Oregon and Seattle when it's 95 and it's hot, but it ain't uncomfortable. And yesterday was uncomfortable, but hopefully it can be a little bit better for them. Because today feels great.
Early, we got here. What time did we get here? We got here at 6, mm-hmm. and. Then we headed to dinner in Red Bank, and we got out of the car. I said to Tina, my God, I said, it is really oppressive.
It was bad last night, man.
We went to a place last night, by the way. Let me get this in. Semolina in Red Bank. And every time we come down, I was telling Tom earlier, every time we come down, Tina and I, we find one fabulous, particularly Italian restaurant after another.
Yeah.
And maybe like 5 years ago, Fresh had just opened in the Atlantic Highlands. Spectacular. We found Mirandola in Bradley Beach, which was fabulous. I found the Semolina, and it's farm to table, and it's got that usual, that motif. Mm-hmm. But with the name Semolina, they're making their own pasta daily. And this was an exquisite meal, stuffed zucchini flowers, which, if you're a Sopranos fan, everybody in the rest of America, it's one of those obscure
Artie Bucco special.
It's one of the craziest things. If you grow up in the Northeast, you certainly know what they are, and you've had them. And then, you know, The Sopranos made them like a national hunt and peck. People were, you know, they're probably going into their local Olive Garden. You got zucchini flowers? You got the zucchini flowers today?
So funny you say that, because Frank, his top pizza recommendation was Rockefeller's right over here across the street. And when I went in there for the first time, somebody came in and they go, "You got any of those zucchini flowers?" He's like, "No, we're all out. We might have some tomorrow." Well, but it was it was literally like the lady was coming in to get them to take them home to cook or to, you know, for their family meal kind of thing.
It's a seasonal, you know, it's got a certain period and availability, and they were spectacular with so it's kind of a
food ain't the problem around here, man.
No. With kind of a beet confit, and Tina had a scallop, a ceviche, scallops. Dinner we both had pastas, and I had the agnolotti which was unbelievable. Just a ragout filling with a corn. I you can't even call it a sauce. It was like almost like a dressing. It was, you know, fresh, you know, probably just lightly blanched corn, green onion, scallion that was cut with like a razor blade, like the scene from Goodfellas with the garlic. It was cut like that.
Don't put too much onions in a sauce.
An aristocrat. Tina had the chiara which is that triangle cut straight pasta with a fresh pesto, a very fresh pesto, and blue crab. And hers was spectacular. And then dessert, sort of a deconstructed, for me, strawberry shortcake with actually, it wasn't a polenta. What was basically substituting for the shortbread, and like a semolina cake, and mascarpone instead of whipped cream, out of this world, and mint, and shredded mint. Tina had a salty caramel, almost like a sundae-ish kind of. It was, and she didn't even let me have a bite. So I don't know. I can't even tell you what it was, how good it was. Anyway, it's tucked around from the downtown. I think it's on White Street. Mm-hmm. Semolina.
The downtown's cute down there.
Oh, Red Bank is. Yeah. Red Bank's is nice as. I mean, it's not Rumson.
It gets crowded on the weekends.
Oh, it's wonderful. And you know, I
Rumson's out where the rich people like Colmus live.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Larry, they got the heliport. The Larry
takes him right to the Belmont.
Yes. Yeah. It lands on the roof of Belmont, actually, and next to Cuomo, who we're still waiting for. They should actually, you know, Larry. Larry should do one of those parachutes, parachute stunting.
Good luck.
How great would that be, right? Look up, Belmont fans.
And they're into the show, and I'm into the final stretch.
That's Larry Colmus parachuting in. Well, Jason, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah. I didn't know you were even going to be here.
I couldn't come last year because I hosted there was a timing crunch because I'm hosting the Captain Gala next Thursday, a week from tonight.
And they moved the Haskell up this year.
They moved the Haskell up. And last year was the first year I did the emceeing. And it really an honor and a pleasure. But it was Thursday, and it made it impossible to come down. So I missed it for the first time in 5 years. So I was thrilled that I was going to be able to come down this year.
You and NBC can come now.
Well, they always, right? Yeah, they've been forever. I will talk to Tom Cassidy too, but my favorite, there's been a couple of very funny, you mentioned, I'm just thinking the TVG is sponsoring. There's been some hysterical sponsors that over the years.
Last year was Betfair, right? Like, I think they switched to it.
Yeah, and I'm sure for TVG's anniversary, but go back. Sometimes when you look at the charts, you go back to look at a chart.
Yeah.
The BlackBerry Haskell. How about that?
Yeah.
And there was also the telephone, not Vodafone, There was the they were sponsor of our show too for several years.
I remember there was
one of those discount discount phone. They were big.
Oh,
they
like call 411 or whatever.
It wasn't that chintzy. It had more of a brand identity.
9999. There was a period there where all your long distances were like those weird little five numbers, and then they went away. It's amazing how fast stuff goes away.
Well,
there's no more Blockbuster Bowl, that's for sure.
Good example.
Yeah.
Good example. Jason Beam. A pleasure.
Yeah, I got to get to work, Steve.
What kind of work you got?
I'm helping Tom with some press releases and help with quotes and stuff.
Outstanding. Good job.
Being a handy.
I'm the notes team. The notes team.
That's exactly notes what team. I'm on. Notes team.
Yeah. Jason Beam, everybody. Beamy Awards himself, and he's just a ubiquitous presence.
Seem to show up everywhere.
Exactly.
Hopefully we'll see a Virginia Derby night.
We'll see. What possibility. A possibility. I'd love to come down. I haven't been there forever.
Yeah. Makes two of us.
literally for you. Jason Beam, always a pleasure. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, 90 minutes in. 90 to come. Steve Haskin next, then Brad Thomas. A rare Brad Thomas visit. Rarer than Hensteeth. And more. Rich Eng later, and maybe we'll get John Himes in here. We'll see. Back after this.